On this episode of Football 301, Matt Harmon is back and better than ever, and we asked you for your biggest questions about your team and the NFL in 2026. Yes, it's a mailbag episode, and yes, it's a fun episode, like always on Football 301. Great show, great to have Matt back, and great to hear from you guys. See you guys in a sec. Hello, and welcome back to Football 301. I'm your host, Nate Tice. Very fun show for you guys today. I say that every show because I hopefully do present a fun show, but I'm very excited because we have a hero coming home, which is very timely for a movie about to come out, The Odyssey. But we have a hero coming home from Europe, I believe, and a co-host that's going to help me answer some questions from you guys, our listeners. We have a mailbag episode, and to help me do that is, let's just get to it, Mr. Matt Harmon, great to see you. How was your little vacay? Tell me all about it. What's the one show you watched? How was your travels? Everything. Let's get it. Let's get it all out.
Hero is a tough title, especially because I feel like I'm going to be absolutely abysmal on this show because this is my first podcast really since coming back. So if I'm rusty, folks, Nate, producers, I do apologize. But yeah, trip was incredible. Portugal, highly recommend. Everybody take, I'm the expert on Portugal now. Okay. So like I got all the goods if you guys want them, but it was incredible. We were in Europe, between mostly Portugal and then Spain for 2 weeks. I did come back home, and then went on a family vacation to the Outer Banks in North Carolina, which was very different. Okay. Than the European trip. But anyways, it was great to take a bunch of time off. It was incredible. We absolutely had a blast, had like the best meal I've ever had in my life in Porto. Stayed in the best hotel I've probably ever stayed at in my life in Lisbon. Drove the smallest car I've ever driven in my life. In Europe. That's one thing, Nate, you would probably feel, I don't know, if you've ever driven around in Europe, you probably feel the same way. It's like, folks our size, not built for this, okay? But anyways, had a great trip. The one show I watched, we were talking about this before we got on the flight out there and then flights back, I watched season 2 of the Godzilla show on Apple TV. What is it called? Monarch, yeah. Legacy of Monsters. Yeah, I watched season 2. I thought season 1 was better, but season 2 was fun enough for the plane.
Kurt Russell's in it, right?
Kurt Russell and his son. Because yes, he and plays himself in two different time periods, which is pretty cool.
That's right.
Actually, I watched the first season at some point when my wife was not home for like a work trip or something like that, back when she was in corporate. And yeah, so I watched the first season. I was like, this would be a good time for me to catch up on season 2 on the flights. It just came out recently. So that's like the one piece of media I've consumed in the last month. And that is also football related too. I'm very much out of my depth on what has been happening in the football world over the last month.
No, I have a lot of thoughts here because one, I'm jealous that you visit not only Portugal, but anywhere in Europe and anywhere in that Iberia Peninsula, all that. I have been, and this is relevant to the game last night, I've always wanted to go to Morocco. Why? I've been trying to figure out why I want to go to Morocco. There's something about North Africa that always like hits my brain. Maybe the Indiana Jones fandom. Maybe like I wanted to be an archaeologist as a kid or a paleontologist because I love Jurassic Park too. And like like sticks in my brain. Yeah, I know, right? It's like, it's awesome. You get to punch bad guys and then find the Holy Grail. Yeah, it's the greatest job ever. That area of the world I've always been fascinated with. I've never visited. I've never actually as well traveled as I consider myself in America and Mexico a little bit. I have never been to Europe. This was my first choice. Time too. I've always wanted to go, but I've never had an opportunity. I was always with football teams and then I had kids. And then now every time I've like had the opportunity, something came up where we just couldn't go. So hopefully soon. I'm very jealous of that. So I'm glad you had a great trip. Enough of us. Let's hear from you guys. We did a mailbag episode. I haven't done one in a while. And I feel like this is a proper time to do one. We got a ton of great questions from you guys, even a couple emails that you guys sent in, but also off of my tweet, and we got some replies there. But we asked for your biggest questions about your team heading into 2026 or the league in general, and we're going to answer as many as we can, which is easier said than done with a show featuring Nate Tice and the returning hero, Matt Harmon. But we'll get to it. We'll start with Skeeter Piffin. Oh, I always love reading names too, usernames. This would be great. Skeeter Piffin, which team's position group is the most underrated in the league. I like this one. Matt, any tickle your brain? Which position group did you think is underrated in the NFL right now?
The first one that just came to mind, and by the way, I am going off the cuff for about 90%.
I love that. No, that's what mailbag should be.
95%. Yeah, 95% of these questions. Don't expect like a long list of top five EPA, this, that, and the other from me.
I want charting. I want versus man coverage. I want versus press.
That doesn't count. That's just in the back of my head. That doesn't count. But no, the first thing that did come to mind for me on this one is actually the Bengals offensive line, because I do still feel like there's love a narrative it. That like, oh, this group is a problem. It's an area of concern. Like, are they ever going to really dedicate resources there to protect Joe Burrow? They've actually dedicated a pretty decent amount of resources there. And I really felt in the back half of last season, if maybe not like the back three-fourths of last season, this is a group that came together really well, particularly in the run game. I feel like we've talked about this over the years, but the Bengals run game has always been a little bit like a source of consternation there with how much they can marry that with the pass game. They live in this very siloed kind of pass game anyways. I felt like things kind of came together specifically on the front five last year. So that's a unit that I do think gets bagged on nationally. And I wanted to kind of pick one that I thought still gets a little bit bagged on in that way, not like a hipster favorite, but I think that's a group that's maybe solid, if not above average at this point. Bengals offensive line, I think, is pretty underrated.
It's pretty fun. Yeah, I wholeheartedly agree with this. I think this is a great answer. Probably the best answer, really, considering how they're talked about and what they really are. Not saying that the Bengals offensive line is the best in the league, but it's definitely above average, and I would even say it's top 10, like 10th. You know, that's like, it's like somewhere in that 8 to 14 range, I would say. That's very safe to say that. I think their coach is really good. Scott Peters. I'm going to get those two right one day. And I also just know, and I think the run game, like you said, it's not sexy. It's not very explosive. Their offense really wasn't that explosive last year, but what their offense faces is a lot of cover two and light boxes of cover two because of the spread and because of the receivers they have. So they have equipped themselves with what they should equip themselves with. They have a jab. Like, they can just jab you to death if they need to, which is great. That's what this team needs to kind of be sustainable. And even if the passing game kind of ebbs and flows based on the defense, or they really have a cap to it, being able to create a lot of third and shorts. That's why Joe Burrow, I mean, watch the Bengals, how many third and threes, I should have looked this up before I came on, but how many third and threes and third and fours they face and third and twos they face. That's Burrow's passing, but it's also the run game with Chase Brown. But great shout out. I'll probably talk about Marius Mims a little later, but he really came along last year, probably his first year fully starting ever, at least in college and pros. And just, you see the talent there. Dylan Fairchild really came along. I liked him coming out of college, but thought he was going to be a projecty wrestler type. And he, again, second half of the year came along. Orlando Brown's kind of funny. I think Orlando Brown has the most set expectations of what he is, and everyone's like, yep, that's what he is. It's like, good, not amazing, not perfect O-line or left tackle, but good. You're fine with Orlando Brown, even if he's not the sexiest tackle. But I think there's a great shout for my answers. I have a couple other offensive lines. I have the Steelers O-line up there too, because I don't think people are kind of getting there, but like, they got multiple really good players. And one of these that I think, because Rodgers gets so much of the oxygen when you talk about the Steelers and their offense, that the O-line kind of just gets waved away, because it's not one of those sexy offenses that put up huge numbers and everyone's like, oh, it's because of the O-line, they're the engine. But this is a legit, legit O-line, even if they do have question marks, because Troy Fontenot's good, Mason McCormick's good, and I think Zach Frazier is an all-pro caliber kind of guy. They'll figure out the right side a little bit this year. So I understand some questions there, but really, I got a bunch of O-lines here. So the Saints O-line, the Chiefs O-line. I threw out the Panthers pass catchers because I knew you were on this show. And I just wanted to kind of maybe, you know, throw a bone over there to Jalen Coker, sure, Tetro McMillan, and I would even throw Mitchell Evans in there as well. But I thought Panthers pass catchers a little underrated around the league.
Yeah, that's a group that, like, I can't wait to see how it kind of plays out in terms of how targets and snaps and routes are allocated, because – you know, I was very mixed on Chris Brazel, the prospect, but he goes in round three and they start talking about him right away as almost like a sacrificial receiver who's going to just help him stretch out the field. Like, that makes a ton of sense for a group that I think they want to move Teteroa McMillan around more than they did last year. I know that Teteroa McMillan wants to get moved around more than he did last year. He's got a foot injury that I think bears monitoring, right? For all of the oxygen that was taken up seemingly right before I left the country about like Roma Dunze talking about his foot injury. Nobody's talking about the fact that Teteroa McMillan is actually not practicing with the foot injury. And he's put on some weight, which I think is probably would be good for his play style, and especially if he does move around more. But anyways, like his interview with me at the Super Bowl, he was specifically bringing up like, look at what they do with Jaxon Smith-Njigba, look what they do with Puka Nacua. And I'm like, that whenever a receiver starts saying that, they're like, look at what they should be doing with me, which I think they can do with this receiver room. And like Xavier Leggett is one of those guys who's a disappointing first round pick, but if he's your fourth best receiver, that's actually pretty good. So that's a good shout on the Panthers pass catchers, and same with the Steelers offensive line. Man, they're one of those units that I think sometimes when you have a quarterback like Rodgers where he gets the ball out so quick, it almost masks and makes an offensive line look better than it is. But I actually think they're up to that quality of an offensive line. And they're really, honestly, they're probably even better in the run game than the pass game, and which is why it's kind of, to me, a shame. It's a little bit of a shame that they have to live in this Rodgers-ish world, because I think they could be like just a mauler of a unit up there, and they just haven't really been able to be that with him at quarterback.
Imagine them like in the Bears offense, you know, something like that. I know the Bears have some talented linemen, but like that's a great offense for him. Anything that's downfield. All those guys. And then, you know, outside the O-lines, I had a couple other spots. The Cardinals D-line, because we have to keep the mentions of the Cardinals going because you're on the show. Cardinals D-line's actually kind of sick. If we're including, you know, Josh Sweat, Zaven Collins is a good player. I know I'll just tout up Cardinals players, but he's a cool front seven player that they use all over the place. Roy Lopez, All Football 301 favorite. Walter Nolan, who was a breakout player, shout out for you, which I wholeheartedly agree with, because I went back and watched the Cowboys game, I believe it was, and he was stepping up there. And Darius Robinson, I never really was a huge fan of coming out, but like he actually is okay slot into the role. But there's another unit that's actually better than you think, and I'll throw out the Titans D-line too. And then, because I can't help myself, Falcons DBs are actually a lot better than you would expect when you kind of like look at it and you're like, oh, actually you're not bad, and watch them on tape and everything. So Falcons DBs I'll throw in there as well. All right, let's get on to the next one. This is Westron with a three. It's like you're playing a Counter-Strike. You know, cool name there. You got to put X's on either side. Which consensus or popular takes about the 2026 season are most likely to be way off, and why? Stone, our producer, Seahawks fan, had a comment about the Rams as a consensus take. But that's a good one. Like, everyone, I mean, they're the Super Bowl favorite, I think, justifiably. But I understand that doesn't, I mean, the NFL, it's so hard to predict anyways. But are there any that came to mind for you that are kind of like leading the charge take wise that you're maybe doing the Lee Corso? Not so fast.
Honestly, that Rams one is a good one remember about 365 days ago, maybe a little bit less than that, we were all concerned about Matthew Stafford's back, and it's like, oh, now it's fine. Now it's fine.
Yeah.
Sometimes it's not, right? Like, actually, it could be the year after the year that you're worried about something. Yep. That would honestly be a good one. Plus, it just seems so consensus that they're the favorite to win the Super Bowl. Obviously, they make Myles Garrett trade. Like, they're the favorite to win the Super Bowl. They're the favorite to win their conference. And yeah, I mean, there's definitely some volatility on that roster, but mostly just at the quarterback position, if he's not 100% healthy. And, you know, do we get like four Ty Simpson starts this year? How does that go? He's still competing with Stetson Bennett, though. So actually, maybe we should say it's maybe four Stetson Bennett starts. That is a thing that was said a few months ago. So that's honestly a really good one. I'm curious, did you have any that immediately popped to mind?
Not the other kind of ones I had. Cowboys and Bengals defenses are garbage. Ones because I think everyone's just I think there's hype train going on anyways that they're going to be improved, so maybe that's not the best one. I said Dak Prescott is a playoff choker. I think maybe in the time you've been gone, I've really bought into the Cowboys even more. I think that's maybe the update I have for you. I've really bought a lot of Cowboys stock the last few weeks. I'm take committed on the Cowboys. So maybe that's the one. Dak Prescott as a playoff choker might be one. But no, but my one little bullet point I had on this was Rams are runaway Super Bowl favorites, which is like, I think they should be the favorites, but it shouldn't just be like, oh, that's it. That's it. They're going to win it. Like, you know, that's what's awesome about the NFL. I'm glad you brought Stafford's back. But the Bengals defense, you already hinted at with talking about their D line or talking about just them, their O line. I'm sorry. But even on defense, like their corners are actually way better than I think people are giving credit for. Dax Hill and DJ Turner. So that was another guy's kind of want to maybe say underrated position groups as well. But nothing really else came to mind. This is maybe a
okay. Well, you have one? One that came to mind for me. And this is something I was beating the drum on just earlier this offseason anyways. I know you share this opinion too, but it does feel like everyone just assumes that, and maybe not everyone, but like 90% of the NFL population just has written in pen now that CJ Stroud is terrible. And I totally don't buy into that at all. Like, I think at bare minimum, I think he's an adequate starting quarterback.
I would say disclaimer, you're very even keeled on Stroud. I think you are probably the most fair Stroud. Like, I'm higher probably than way more than consensus, definitely, but than most. But I think you've been very neutral on Stroud.
I had him. I didn't have him in my top 10 going into last season. I think you did. You did have him in the top 10 going into last season.
10th, I think.
Like fringe-ish top 10 quarterback. Mm-hmm. And I was probably a little bit more like maybe 12th or 13th. So again, I think bare minimum, he's an adequate starting quarterback. And honestly, by like EPA per play last year, he was a top 10 quarterback. He was sandwiched between Sam Darnold and Patrick Mahomes among guys that were starters for the vast majority of the season. Sam Darnold won the Super Bowl and Patrick Mahomes is one of the best quarterbacks, if not the best quarterback of this era. So yeah, like I think that Stroud has already checked that box. He's just a victim of the last thing that we saw, really the last two things we saw, because there was two playoff games. He was abysmal and there's really no defending that. I think that the offense can be better in year two under Nick Caley. I'm really excited about them integrating both Jaden Higgins and especially Jalen Nowell more. I think that will be really fun. We'll see what Tank Dell can give them. But yeah, I mean, Nico Collins is a stud. He's a top five caliber receiver. And as long as everything revolves around a guy like that in the passing game, I think this is going to be a really good unit this year. And I think Stroud will catch people by surprise, even if he just plays at the level that he did last season.
Yeah, I at the second half of last year too, when the O-line sorted out, it like really just felt a little bit better. But at the very end too, I think people forgot how many injuries they had at their skill player spots. And also the run game was based around like Woody Marks, you know, like and the ghost of Nick Chubb. You know, so it's one of these things where it wasn't great. And I think actually there, if we're talking about maybe underrated units, I guess, their old line, yeah, they improved it. And it's kind of like, okay, it's a hodgepodge of names. It's actually, I see the vision. And I'm not saying like as high as I got in some of those other guys where I was talking underrated or anything, but this is much better, way better than what they've been trotting out for the last 3 years. And yes, they lost, Laremy Tunsil, who's, you know, star quality tackle. But just having everybody else be competent or better, like Kalen Rutledge at center, overdrafted a little bit. But like him at center is going to be way better than they've just trotted out. Like Jake Andrews did his best, like as best as he could do, but he wasn't great. And then I think Braden Smith is talented. It's just injuries with him. But then now Trent Brown gets to be a backup. Like Blake Fisher gets to be a backup. And I think Ariante Ursary is actually pretty dang good. Like I actually think he has a chance to be a real good quality starting left tackle. So yeah, I would say even just Texans maybe offense somehow has been a little underrated. Like, the more I've marinated on it, the higher I kind of get on the Texans. So like, because I think, yeah, their offensive improvements, it's hard. It's like, it depends on the team. Like when people talk offensive improvements, I think you get this too. It's that sometimes we overdo it. I would say we, I just mean the collective national media and go, oh, they did all this. Look at these names. And then sometimes when a team tried to do that and it failed, the next time they do it, then everyone just kind of, like the Bears O-line. Oh, the Bears offense is going to be sick. This, I'm thinking about the Shane Waldron year. And it was like, oh, it was awful, falling apart. And then now they improved the line with Tooney and Jonah Jackson. Everyone's like, yeah, all right, we've already done this. Okay, we'll see. And it became one of the best O lines last year. Not saying that's going on with the Texans, but saying that I think their improvements are more real than just the stuff that we just kind of go, yeah, those are just names. Different doesn't always mean good. But that's kind of how I've gone around with the like their offensive tact isn't, it's very, you know, I've used this joke before. It's very missionary position. It's very just traditional and very just like, okay, that's what you do. And it's nothing. Yeah. It's not the Kama Sutra. You know, it's just, it gets the job done. But I do think now that they have the talent to do that, you mentioned the receivers, Nico Collins, I think is phenomenal, of course, but the auxiliary guys can step up too. And even adding to the tight end room, you know, Dalton Schultz doesn't have to be the only tight end with a pulse, which limited their offense a ton last year too, when they can do stuff out of multi-tight end looks because they didn't have anybody. So yeah, I don't know. I'm really kind of buying more and more Texan stock, which I know it's pretty easy, but I think it just feels more real to me than maybe I even thought maybe a few months ago.
I like it. But, yeah. By the way, real quick, by the way, I think the hardest thing in the NFL to do is to go from great to elite, but it's not like it's almost just as impactful to go from awful to acceptable. And I think that's what they'll do on the offensive line this year. Kind of sounds like it.
That's it. I think everyone and their mom thinks they're going to have a top three defense, you know, at the very least, maybe the best defense in the league with the pass rush. And the pass rush is the great equalizer. And the AFC, and I'm pulling the string again, the AFC is wide open. So if you have one elite unit, the other unit just has to be average. And you can win a freaking, not even just win your division or make a run, win the Super Bowl, I would say. Mm-hmm. So that's where I'm at with the Texans. Like, I think this could be the 16th, 14th best offense with a top three defense. And that's very much an AFC contender. Yeah, there's a little Texan sidebar there. That's great. All right, we'll get on to the next one. This one, the producers are pretty excited about this one. I also noticed this one, this reply. This one's highlighted from Microsoft Word Champion. Great name. What's your argument to refute the quote, the hashtag start nine movement for the Vikings starting JJ McCarthy over Kyler Murray? There's even a website, start9.win. Got your own special URL here. God, we're just giving this publicity. This is unbelievable.
I know.
The quote from the site, the probability driven, receipts backed, locker room endorsed, --, hilarious, case for the Vikings rightful QB1. What's my argument to refute this? Do you have anything off the top of your head, other than just pointing at any JJ McCarthy stat from last year?
Yeah, I mean, that would be the argument against it.
That's the argument.
The film, the stats would be the argument against it. I mean, I didn't know this existed at all.
General injury
until
history.
I opened up this outline. I honestly can't believe, you know, this, my first reaction to this, when I saw this on the outline, when I opened the website that saw that there's allegedly a movement about this, my number one thought was, dude, sometimes maybe I think football has gotten too big. This whole NFL content
shrink
stuff
the game.
Has gotten too big. Time to shrink the game. I mean, look, and this isn't me being, I'm not trying to be mean to JJ McCarthy or anything. I just think, man, you shouldn't care about this much. Like, you should not make this a big part of your personality that, like, JJ McCarthy has been unfairly treated, this, that, or the other, whatever. I mean, there shouldn't be a movement about this, basically. There shouldn't be it shouldn't be a probability driven receipts backed locker room endorsed case website based on this situation. Like, if you want to tell me that there's a chance that Kyler Murray's not good enough and like JJ McCarthy does start games this year, I'm totally open to that. So I wouldn't say I don't really think there needs to be a big argument to refute the movement. There's to me way more argument that does refute the movement than there is in favor of the movement, despite the fact that there's a website. My argument would be there shouldn't be a movement about it. Like, let's just see what happens.
Yeah. Because the earlier returns aren't worthy of a movement whatsoever. It's right. And trust me, us talking about it, it's not the meanest thing that's happened to JJ McCarthy this week. But for me, like, even getting into
didn't miss,
like,
that.
Just McCarthy. Yeah. Like, even, you know, like, if Kyler wasn't even a part of this, like, just saying with McCarthy at the very least, is that it's as much mental with him as is mechanical, but the mental stuff leads to the mechanical issues or it amplifies them. That's why he has to. I haven't seen so much publicity about a quarterback learning how to layer throws in. like a guy that was drafted in the top 15 of the draft doesn't know how to throw a football with touch, which is less. Therein lies the rub. But he has so many throws where he just tries to gun it in there as hard as he freaking can. And the ball sprays on him. He throws it late. It's uncatchable. And that's because he's late mentally. And that's just a classic quarterback kind of thing, is that if the quarterbacks feel late, they go, well, then I have to throw this as hard as I can to like squeeze it into the window. And it's just like anything with athletics or just anything. When you are confident or capable enough and you reach a limit of capable, or not a limit, but a tier of capability, you can do things with more at ease and smoother and anticipate those things because you're just so much more in control. So if you see guys gunning it in, that's usually that's the culprit. That's the symptom here. And on top of that, he keeps getting hurt. That you can't get reps if you keep getting hurt. And that's just, it is what it is. Like that's a real thing with him. And then now bringing it to the Cowher part of this equation, if Cowher has his third best season, I would even say fourth best season as a starter this year, not even his best, that's like as good as Sam Darnold was with the Vikings a couple of years ago. So Kyler's above average season is better than anything that I think McCarthy is even capable of at this point in time. I don't think there should be a movement. And I think just people kind of elongating this, it's just like, you know, you're prolonging the inevitable of about what's going to happen at the starting position. I have heard though, it wasn't like they were, either quarterback was really, burning the house down during OTAs, but pads aren't on, so yeah, we'll see and all that June. Good stuff. Yeah, shorts, all that stuff. It's June. Who gives a
Yeah, it's June. That's my response.
The probability-driven receipts back, locker room endorsed case. They care. They care.
Yeah, I mean, I get it. Well, in fairness to the McCarthy movement, I also thought that some of the like psychoanalysis of his quotes versus Kyler's quotes and then Kyler's quotes back again, but please stop this. That was an ultimate one where we were talking about this before the show, but in one group chat people were sending those and I'm like, I can't, when I was on vacation, sending some of those like McCarthy people bagging on them. So I'm like, I can't believe anybody's talking about this. I'm going to take off June every single year. Like that was my thought about that. Who cares? Like talk to me in training camp is my thought on this. Yeah. And you know what? If we're a few weeks into camp, Nate, and Kyler's struggling and McCarthy's looking cool, well, let's talk. The movement can get rolling then. But right now it's almost July. Like let's talk about something else.
There's a post Father's Day rule. It's like anything after Father's Day, because that's just, anyone knows the mini camps usually end the week of Father's Day or leading into Father's Day. There's other reasons why that is, but yeah, that's when coaches' vacations start in theory. So anything after Father's Day before like July 21st, nothing matters. That's just the void. That's the one off month. That's where I tie in my vacation, if you note. But that's the one off month of the football season where it's like, does any of this matter? No. Did anyone get signed? No. Okay. Let's just fast forward. And now we don't even have a supplemental draft to scratch that ish. I wish we got some good content out of that at least. Like seven different segments on freaking Brandon Sorsby in the supplemental draft, cracking jokes.
I missed that one completely, which is good because I have no takes.
Nothing happened. It wasn't even played. They're like, yeah. Oh man, NFL, they take money from sports gambling sites. Well, then players can't gamble. Nope, they can't gamble.
Nope, they cannot
gamble.
they cannot gamble.
they're adults and they tell them they can't do this. It's pretty easy to understand.
Yeah.
All right, here we go. Get on to the next one. I don't want to go on that rant again. This is from Deimos75. Speaking of the lines, what do you think will be, or who do you think will be the most improved? Is it what or who? Most improved O-line in 2026. Our producers put in a great note. Thank you very much. That Nate had, that's me, had the Texans and Browns O-lines as the most improved units in May, which I stand by. I already talked about the Texans a little bit. And I think the Browns one is just that. I thought it was going to go so nuclear this offseason that the fact that it actually looks kind of sort of competent is actually a nice surprise for me. But kind of talked about O-lines a little bit, but any others that you want to bring up here?
Yeah, one that's boring because it's not like they're remaking the unit or anything, but I just think they're going to be healthier this year is Tampa Bay. And that's one.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. Great call.
It's easy to forget that like Graham Barton was playing tackle at the beginning of last year after being an awesome center in his rookie, like exactly what we kind of all expected of him as a prospect. Like, mm-hmm. Oh man, this is a guy that probably can kick out a tackle because he's played there, but like he should be a badass center. Yeah. It's like we've gotten that whole spectrum already, but we know that he's a great, and just never really felt like it was all cohesive last year for Tampa Bay. And that's something that I don't, when we're talking about the Bucs and kind of their hot start and then fall off in the back half of the year, I do think offensive line cohesion and some of the health stuff just never really got mentioned enough last year. Cody Mock injury as well. Because we talk about like Baker's injury, Ibuka's first half, second half splits and the whole deal. Jalen McMillan missing time, the whole deal. But we don't talk enough about how the offensive line was never really cohesive. That could be a unit that I don't think ever sniffed playing like a top 10 unit last season, but could be widely regarded and perform as a top 10 unit this season.
Keep bringing back the same O-line coach. I know it's Zach Robinson, but bring back the same O-line coach, Kevin Carberry. That matters too. No, that's a great shout. You know, it's that line. I consider them a top five line until going into the year. To the Mock injury, like you said, they had other injuries with Wirfs and everything to start the year and throughout the year. So, no, great shout there. The other one I kind of even threw out here, I said the Saints in a weird way because they have David Edwards now, and I was like, oh yeah, put you over the top. And then the Lions actually have one of the most improved offensive lines, which is because it just went from great to last year where it was just all over the place and figuring out Graham Glasgow and Mahogany going through. We got rookie guard. Decker was on his last legs, literally and figuratively. And then now drafting Blake Miller, signing Cade Mays, and another year for the guards to kind of develop. They have a little bit of depth behind them as well. So I say the Lions, in a way, getting back to being a strength of the team, an identity of the team. So I want to throw them in there as well. They also signed Tyler Conklin. Actually, there's something to Tyler Conklin. Like he's worthy of getting reps. I've always kind of put it that way with him. He just can't get to a situation that's conducive for that right at the moment. So we're going to take our first break. And by the way, shout out to Game Time. Check out the Game Time app for great prices on tickets. Hopefully, U.S. keeps winning. Maybe check out some of those World Cup tickets. But check out Game Time. We're going to take our first break, and we'll come back with a few more questions from you guys. See you guys in a sec. All right, we are back. Next question from the mailbag. We got Clark Brooks. He asked, Brian Daboll and Cam Ward, it'll work, right? Right? What do we think, Matt? Is this going to work? Is this marriage going to work?
I love this question. I love this question because just in how it's asked, like, it'll work, right? That's the type of mailbag question you need to ask. Like, clearly Clark has already kind of at least 85% got himself there, and he's looking for the last push, really confirmation here. So I'm going to be super unhelpful here, Clark, and say maybe. I think maybe it could work. I think it will work better than what we saw last year. Last year was atrocious by multiple levels. So that also, like, I'll answer the question with a question here. Like, what is work to you, Clark? What is work to you and to us, Nate Tice? Like, what does that mean? Because I think it will be better than last year. What ceiling are we shooting for here? Not just for Cam Ward, but just the Titans offense as a whole. I know you're really excited about it's fair to say you're excited about Cam Ward and feel better about what we saw last year. As we talked about, I think previously, 100 years ago now, it feels like to me, we talked about these years, you two quarterbacks, there's like no stat you can point to with Cam Ward whatsoever, but pretty much everybody I trust with quarterbacks watches the guy play last year and says like, there's more than enough promise to go here. I think going back and watching the Titans receivers, there's a lot of reasons why we can give Cam Ward a pass. I just am very mixed on the whole Brian Daboll, honestly. I think is the way I would say this is that, and that's honestly more of the, even though he's the more quote proven commodity of the two, I think he's the bigger variable in terms of defining that what is works here, because I think he's more than good enough to be a NFL offensive coordinator. I think actually him designing a pretty spread and shred shotgun based attack actually can probably be good for getting Cam Ward on base, because right now, based on what we saw last year, I think he's not on base yet. We can't say that based on just the results from last year, but I think that Brian Dable's good enough to do that. Getting him, you know, helping him around third base, I don't know that Dayball's the guy that, just with what I've seen so far, and especially what we saw in New York, is the guy I would pick there. And I'd also kind of worry too, if I was a Titans fan, and this is a stupid thing to worry about, because if it happens, it means it went really well this year. If Dayball and his offense is good this year, is he out of the door for a head coaching job? Because he pretty clearly still carries himself as like a head coach. You know, he has a lot of say about who they brought in personnel wise clearly this year. So it's like he out the door for a head coaching job after 1 year. If that happens, it means things went well this year for the Tennessee Titans, but it would also be kind of all right, now we're starting over with Cam Ward's third offensive coordinator in 3 years, and not even like third play caller, because he had multiple play callers in his first year.
I think you kind of got exactly where my answer was going to be, or you got to where it's just, I actually have more faith in Ward in this equation than I do Dable, which is kind of not what you expect for the experienced offensive play caller that has every media person's number on speed dial, it seems like. But Ward, even like you said, where we have talked about, there's not like a stat I can point out and go like, no, just trust this. The sack rate was high. Turnovers, fumbles. I do think fumbles will be a bugaboo for him because he doesn't have the biggest hands. But I do think there was a lot of processing stuff that's like, one, made him more of a comfortable fit in any type of offense, meaning I think he can do under center well, he can throw on the move well, he can turn his back to the defense, he can operate on third down and throw with anticipation against the blitz. Like, so there's just these signs of positive play and stuff that you can not only just win with, but you win because of him and how he executes. My issue or my worry is that Dable will see how Cam Ward throws, which is, anyone watches Cam Ward throw, it's really unorthodox. That's why I call him Rodney Mullen. Sidearm throws, underhand throws, split, you know, saddle release points, you know, with his feet, I should say, or platforms. And that Dable's going to watch that and go like, oh, we got to throw RPOs. And we're just going to throw RPOs because he gets rid of the ball so quick. And we want him making decisions and everything, but it's different. I think Ward actually has to play in a more traditional offense that is more under center, that is more, you know, eye formation, that is more just like that, because I actually think his skill set actually is conducive to that, which is a compliment to Ward that I think he can fit in anything. So that's where I'm worried, is that Dable will be like, well, he's a young guy and this is how I got going with Josh Allen. We did all these like QB run games. That's another thing. Cam Ward's not a runner. And I understand the stereotypes of, and I'll be totally frank here, of a young black quarterback that's very, you know, creative and everything. He doesn't want to run. Like, he runs as a last resort. That's how he was in college. That's how he is as a pro. And I'm scared that the head coach that uses his quarterbacks as a battering ram, Gronn from Lord of the Rings, that's how he uses these guys, that he's going to go, oh, this guy's athletic, I'm going to run him. And like, just those, that's, and this is just theory. Maybe Dable is smart enough to know this, but that's just my worries, because he is, over time, when with his play calling, it's just never had that element of like, okay, there's the next step with it. There's nice basic stuff with what his quarterbacks can do, but I never felt like they took that next step. And even just looking at right now, all the times that Dable's either been a coordinator or a coach in the NFL or a head coach in the NFL, whether he was calling plays or not, he's only had three offenses with a positive EPA. And this is, I mean, he's been listed as a coordinator or as a head coach on 12 offenses. 12 offenses Brian Dable's been a coordinator or head coach of. And they've had a positive EPA three times. And two of those were with a Dragon at quarterback and Josh Allen. And the other one was the 1 year, his first year with the Giants, where they ran kind of the money play offense and everything kind of broke right for them. So I don't know. Is it going to work? I think it's going to be better than it was last year, because it can't be worse. And also, I do think there'll be more understanding what the O-line is. I think a little bit better, but there's just, it's not exactly, I'm totally enthused. It's kind of the Greg Roman conundrum. He does enough to get you going like, okay, yeah, this is above board. But then over time, the warts will start showing. That's where I'm at.
Yes,
I think this year can be fine.
The counterpunches.
Yes. It's, if they do have a year or two, are we going to be frustrated after a month of that? You know, that's maybe my worries. And maybe that's just Much Ado About Nothing. That's maybe just getting ahead of ourselves and all of that, but that's kind of just where I see it right now, as just far as this fit and everything. But I do think it's a compliment to Ward that I think he can execute anything you ask of him. Maybe deep balls to the sidelines are an issue. You brought it up a little bit too when you're, I think you were charting receivers and you kind of noticed that, but that's also a thing with him. That's the tiny hands and how he throws sidearm, and that's a mechanical thing. So those are the one little things that maybe he's not perfect at, but it's like, all right, don't have him run a Bruce Arians offense. All right, done. All right. Right. No one runs that anyway. So we're good. We're okay here. We can make do with this, but I think the surroundings are a little better, and I think Ward will show a little bit more, even if it's not like top 10 season out of nowhere. All right, we'll get to the next one. It was good Titans talk. I'm so interested by the Titans. Like, I think their defense is going to be cool, and I just want to see what the offense looks like. I just want to see. That's what it is, good or bad. I just want to see it. That's really what it is. Next one from Beach QB1, a.k.a. Johnny Utah. Who do you guys think are the top five young offensive tackles in the league? And does Amarius Mims from the Bengals crack that list? You said, oh yeah, I'm shooting from the hip here. This is the one question I had notes on that for my answer. But any names come to mind outside of Amarius Mims, or if I can steal the ball like Russell Westbrook if you need me to.
Steal it. Steal it. If you actually put notes together on this, steal it. Steal it.
I did, because I was like, this is a good question, because how would I kind of stack up? So I just went rookie contract. I feel like that's, that's fair. That qualifies. It hasn't been paid yet on that second deal. So I put together a list. I had 12 names. Try to narrow it down from there. I would say Armin Membu from the Jets is up there. Joe Alt from the Chargers is up there. I think Mims is up there. I think he would at least be top six. Troy Faltnew, I think if the signs of what he showed, it's health more for him. Now you can say that for Mims too. Darnell Wright is a lock. He's for sure in the top five. Darnell Wright only allowed one quick pressure all of last year. That's remarkable. And it finished with an excellent one-on-one pressure rate. And then Josh Simmons too. But Josh Simmons is just such a I don't know what to think about Josh Simmons, because it's just missed time, injury stuff. You know, you just don't know. But
looks like a tight end right now.
Yeah. Oh my God. He looks like he's 280. I know. He looks like, looks like Jimbo Covert. But he was tied for the highest rate of 1-on-1 blocks among all tackles last year, meaning he didn't get chip help or double teams. He was tied with Lane Johnson. So pretty good company. He finished with a 6.9% 1-on-1 pressure rate. Is that good? That's great. Anything 10% average among starting tackles. So 6.9%, very good. But he's on this list. It's just, I don't know what to do with him, but I'll mention some of the other names I jotted down. Patrick Paul for the Dolphins, Paris Johnson Jr. for the Cardinals, not last year's Paris Johnson Jr., the year before Paris Johnson Jr. So, but he could be easily on this list. But if you're betting on the upside of him or just the optimist view of him, Arisante Ursary, who I just mentioned for the Texans, Anton Harrison for the Jags. I don't think he's been paid yet. So he might have gotten paid. So I might have screwed myself up. Kelvin Banks with the Saints, and then Warren McClendon with the Rams. Actually played real well last year. And I kind of wanted to give him a shout out. And then Membu's teammate, Olufoshanu. I want to see Fashanu with a normal quarterback. He got really hurt by the Justin Fields experience and just chaotic offensive situation. But there's some good moments with him. So I just want to stay high on him. But any other names you want to throw in there? As I pass the ball back finally after my 42% usage rate.
I mean, I think you nailed it, but Joe Alt was going to be like, I think the clear and obvious number one. I know that's tough to say after he had like truly rank 1 to 5. I know it's just tough because obviously he missed a lot of time last year, but he was so impactful when he was on the field. By the way, we said earlier about like layup, the Bucks are going to be better this year because they're healthier offensive line wise, most improved. Obviously, I think the Chargers will be one of those as well. In addition to scheme change, some additions on the interior offensive line as well, and subtractions on the interior offensive line as well, addition by subtraction there. So, I think that they're like Joe Alt would be my clear number one. I think Darnell Wright's a pretty honestly clear and convincing number two if we were to rank the top five. And then I think it gets a little hairier from there. I think Kelvin Banks is a good shout, and Paris Johnson was probably the guy that I had the toughest one to rank if we were to do a top five. He's just because he was so good the year prior, and obviously last, I saw a report he wants like $40 million a year. I don't know if that's a real report or if that's fake news on the internet, but yeah, an interesting one. I don't know.
What's 40 million? News.
Paris Johnson, upcoming offensive tackle. I'm like, wow, about $40 million a year. I mean, I want $40 million a year too, but you know, that's got to be fake news.
I mean, if you played,
I shouldn't even brought it up.
If you played like the first couple of years, maybe, but man, you're not the one I'm betting on to reset the market. If he plays to his like his ceiling, yeah, then oh yeah, but like he's only done that for like half a year. So okay, wow, that's not the name. I actually am kind of dig it. Once I talked about the Cardinals D line, Cardinals O line underrated. Cardinals skill players underrated unit.
Yeah,
it's just everybody just ignore the quarterback. You know,
yeah, but just ignore the quarterback.
He's holding out right now.
I know. I can't believe that didn't get solved in the month I was out of the country. I mean, come on. But yeah, actually that's one like when we talk, I keep going back to questions earlier, but yeah, I just feel like the Cardinals are going to be better than everybody assumes, yes. Which assumes like they're going to pick first in the draft, but God, then you just get the quarterback and it's the skill position players are really good and they think they fit this system really well. And I think LaFleur is not a bozo. Not
yeah. And they can definitely lean on the run game. I know we make jokes and fantasy wise, that's going to be annoying, but real football wise is going to be sick. And like that, I know. And I know it's a bit, and I'm really trying to say this all honestly, like just ignore my Cardinals stock from the last few years. We're resetting it, guys. Resetting all this chatter. But it's, I look, and you know, the defense still has some incomplete parts, you know, the DBs have beaten up and all that, but the D-line, O-line, and like the skill players are actually pretty dang good. I think the offensive system is going to be great. Like, I really do think Mike LaFleur is going to do some cool stuff. And I think we talked about Michael Wilson is a phenomenal fit for this offense. And I think Marvin Harrison Jr. will be a better fit with these QBs. And we're always talking about square peg round hole stuff. I don't know. It's just, there's more to here than, you know, just the same old Cardinals kind of thing. Like they're my more favorite of the bad group of teams, I think, this year, if you're including like the Dolphins and the Jets, I guess a little bit too. Jets are sneaky interesting too, but yeah. All right. Yeah. Enough Cardinals talk. We should yeah, Cardinals talk. I'm sorry, guys. All right. Still, I promise I have no family member on that staff. We have the same last name. We are not family members. We are not related. I know we look the same. I know we have the same last name. We are not related. I promise you guys that. Maybe he figures out where Tice, what that last name comes from. I think it's Matthias. But all right. How about this one right here? Because I was actually curious. I want to see what you want to think here. We have a couple more, but I want to skip through them. But Axel MTG, multi-table gaming. How much of an upgrade is Myles Garrett really over Verse? I get that Myles Garrett is better, but it's not like he's replacing an average starter. But this is kind of like what you're talking about, going from bad to average, you know, good to great and everything. But really, just before I even kick it to you, like this is a great example of a bell curve. And the NFL yes. and a lot of positions are like a bell curve. Depends on the position. But at edge, Myles Garrett is the A+, and then Jared Verse is B+. I'll put him at B+, you know, B+. But there's more B+s in the league than maybe one or two A+s in the league. And that's my answer right there. But anything that maybe you want to add on to that?
Yes. And I think, obviously, this is, I think of everything in terms of like tiers when you're ranking things, and the bell curve is along the yes. same principle yep. that yep. It's just, there's like true tier one elite players at any position. There's going to be very, very few. You can maybe, if you're being generous, get to like five or six, I think. And this yeah. is something that I used to throw the word around elite a lot when specifically talking about receivers. And now I am pretty hesitant to like ever do it, because I think it should be a small, very select group. Like it should be really hard to be considered there. And yeah, like that, because of that, the hardest thing to do is to get into that group for any position.
Yep.
And that's why when you do, because this is just how my brain works, when I sit down and do like any tier based ranking, I love to put it into like colors, because then you see, oh yeah, this, like yep. this purple tier or whatever color, it's really yeah. small, but this yellow mm-hmm. tier of yeah, like B+ players, it's starting to get bigger. You get down to tier four, tier five, it's getting really big. There's a lot of really just good players in the NFL at every position. There's very, very few elite players. So I actually think like the hardest, one of the hardest things to do, as I said earlier, is to go from good, not even just good, to go from great to elite. And I think Jared Verse is a great player, great starter, but I think Myles Garrett is elite. So when you almost like do a disservice of sitting down and saying, well, Myles Garrett is number one, but Jared Verse is number eight if we're ranking edge players. I'm just making up numbers off the top of my head, because that doesn't actually show the gap between there and doesn't really do it justice. And that's why I like doing any sort of, even though I'm sure we're going to do it, top 10 shows and all this, it's like, it's stupid because the reality is it actually doesn't show the delta, the gap between one and six or seven or whatever.
That, and that's kind of what I think baseball grading does it in a decent way. And, you know, the 20 to 80, I've referenced it a few times, 40 is average, but they do it like where 50 is one standard deviation above. So pretty good. 60 is two standard deviations above. And in my parlance, that means you're good. You're hard good, maybe to very good is that scale. That's a guy in football terms to me is like in a good year, he's making the Pro Bowl. You know, like that's kind of how I rate that, just depending on the position. And then it goes above that, you know, you get higher tiers above that. So, you know, so 55 to 60 is 1.5 to 2 standard deviations. And then 70 is like 3 standard deviations. And 80 is like the best player you've ever seen. So to me, Myles Garrett's somewhere in that 70 to 80, which is, so we're talking about 60 to 70. That's a full standard deviation above. That's the, like, from good to great to elite excellent. You know, that and the E words and to the, but you have to be, and this comes back into scouting all the time. This is kind of the art of scouting, but to make it a little bit more science driven or whatever you want to put a number on everything, you have to kind of be true to that. I always say you got to round down. Oh, is this guy good or great? Well, if you have to question, he's good. You know what I mean? Like, is he great or is he elite? Well, if I'm asking that question, that means he's great. It should just be it should be like, you know, where you're throwing the red flag and challenging. It should be without a shadow of doubt, this guy's one of the best you've seen. To me, that's one Myles Garrett. And with Verse, it's like, oh, he's good, great, but I can compare him to this guy from 1999, this guy in 2002. Like, there's four of these guys that play like this in the league right now. How many Myles Garretts can I compare to in my entire life? You know, and that's the difference, at least to me. And that's not a knock on Verse. He's a Pro Bowl quality player. No. But that's the difference. Like, you keep getting to, it's like a whole team going from, oh, we're a playoff team to, oh, we're a contender. That's a big jump. And that's the same kind of between these guys as well. So I think this is a fair question. And even saying that, like, well, can we get the production anyways? Totally. There's only X amount of guys that without the ball in their hands, so meaning non-quarterbacks, that truly change the gravity of the entire football field from their defense to how the offense operates pre-snap and post-snap against them, and Myles Garrett's one of them. Jared Verse, good player. Yeah, if we have nothing else to worry about, we might chip help against him. But Myles Garrett's like, every third down, every passing play, we have to have a plan against him. Only X amount of guys in the league are like that. There's a couple receivers like that. There's a couple corners like that. There's a couple edges like that. And he's one of them, and truly one of them, without even a shadow of doubt. All right, we'll get to our last break, and we'll come back with a few more questions from you guys. This has been great. Hope you're enjoying it. See you guys in a sec. All right, we are back. We're going to get to a few more questions from you guys. This has been so much fun. This is one I really like. This was from, I thought at first when I read it was Fondue Sports, but it was Fond of Houston Sports or HOU Sports. Other than QBs. Fondue Sports. I know how my brain read it at first. I know. we can spend 4 hours trying to talk about my brain and how it sees things. But other than QBs, who are some under the radar or underappreciated players from each contender that if they regress this season or get hurt, I could say, could be crippling? And as a Texans fan, he mentioned this, and I thought this is a great candidate for this. This is like the epitome of this kind of player. As a Texans fan, this comes from seeing the on-off splits of Azeez Al-Shaair. And that's keystone player, however you want to put it, the Atlas player, the thing just holding everything together, you know, putting the world on his back, and might not be the star doing that. Sometimes it is the star, but sometimes there's these other kind of players. Any others come to mind? I think Azeez Al-Shaair is one of the best answers for this, but any of these come to mind for you? I had a funny one that was receiver related, but I wanted to see your reaction after I said
what's your funny one?
Low key, Zay Flowers with the Ravens. Like,
dude, that's like, funny. I just finished Dave Flowers charting last night, and this is a great answer. So continue. Yeah.
Because as much as we love Rashad Bateman, it's if he's my number one, am I going to winning a Super Bowl with Rashad Bateman as my number one in 2026? I don't know.
my ban on talking about my therapist's ban on talking about Rashad Bateman for me is still in effect. We're negotiating whether I can begin talking about Rashad Bateman again here soon. We'll see. I'm kidding, by the way. But anyways, no,
I promise I won't stress eat if I could talk about Rashad Bateman.
give and take. It's easier for me to not stress eat than talk about Rashad Bateman if we're being totally honest about my vices. But anyways, on Zay Flowers, it's funny. I actually think because I have talked so much about Rashad Bateman over the last, however many years, I probably haven't talked about Zay Flowers enough. And I feel like people don't talk about Zay Flowers enough, but Zay Flowers is really, really good. And he's another one that this came up for me consistently when charting these year guys that are going into year four players. The first guy I thought about was like Quentin Johnston, where I do think that Quentin Johnston, like, we still, what I meant, my point in saying all this is that I think for a lot of these guys, we still kind of remember who they were as rookies, especially when they had like a really defining, but Quentin Johnston is still he's a flawed player. I think he will always be a little bit volatile, but he's a much better, he's a better player than he was as a rookie, which, like, he was a disaster as a rookie. He's no longer like a disaster. And for Flowers, I still think people talk about him as what I thought coming into the league and as a rookie was a very mistake prone player. And he still will have like a handful of, bozo moments every now and again. Like, he's got fumbles. He had the one play where Lamar threw him a touchdown on a go route. He kind of, I thought, needlessly and maybe ticky-tacky call pushed off against the Bengals, but still, like, just a really, really quality receiver who I think is not only cut out some of the mistakes, but also a guy that I think isn't quite like as Mickey Mouse as he used to be with some of the routes they've assigned him. He was really more downfield last year. I think he can be awesome in this offense, and I think that's a great call, because if they lost him, it's like, it's Rashad Bateman, Mark Andrews, and then the rookies and Devontae Walker. Like, it gets really rough really quickly. So I think because of that, like, Flowers is actually in line for a pretty monster year this year. And if they lost him or something happened, for whatever reason, they would be pretty banged in Baltimore.
It's one of those. That's why I like these questions. Cause I was like, one, these are my favorite type of players to talk about. Two, I might be writing about something like this week, so that actually kind of helps me. So thanks, guys. But like, Flowers is one of those, because I'm not the biggest fan of Flowers. I like him. I think ideally he's a good number two for you, and I think you could say this about a lot of receivers. That's why elite guys are elite guys.
Correct.
But I agree with you, where last year he wasn't as frustrating. He has a thing where he gets the ball and a propensity to do this, and then he immediately loses ground. And Amari Cooper,
he's got the Deontay Johnson gene, is what we call it in this house.
Deontay Johnson. Oh yes, Deontay Johnson does that. Yes, he did do that, I should say. Amari did that. The guy that does it but got away with it was Tyreek Hill, but Tyreek Hill also had literally world-class speed, so he'd get away with it. Well, Zay would kind of, he does the bounce around, but I think he got better at that this year. I really do. I really do think that he took coaching points to get north and everything. But yeah, I just looked at the rest of their group, and I think they like Elijah Sherratt, just reading tea leaves. And they mentioned the power slot usage, which is, I think, very exciting. Right, baby, I think this podcast is probably more excited about that than anybody else. So it was, the vision is crystallizing. This is great. But it was just looking in Mark Andrews, but losing also auxiliary tight ends like Isaiah Likely. So, like, he was a big part of this receiving game. And it just, you look at their, and the Ravens want to contend this year. Again, AFC wide open. You got Lamar frickin' Jackson. I think Jesse Minter is going to get that defense right. And defense has still got a ton of interesting players. So really, it's the offense. And I even looked at center for them. Obviously, losing Tyler Linderbaum is a big loss, but they have a competition going on right now with Danny Pinter and Javon Gwynn, who was with Dwayne Ledford, their O-line coach in Atlanta. Yeah, you want to talk about new names? This guy's been in the league for a few years. And I'm like, I feel like I watched you once, and I'm like trying to remember anything. But that's the issue. There, how many teams have we seen now in the last couple of years go, we're going to take the center that the head coach knows because he's going to get this offense going. He knows all the calls. And most of them suck. There's a reason they were backups. Like Glam Glasgow, as much as, I mean, he started a bunch of everything, but he didn't start center for a reason. There's Frank Ragnow and everything, but there's a lot of guys out there that are like, oh yeah, we'll start the center. Going on in Jacksonville, he actually did a fine job. The guy that they drafted to bring in Graham, now I'm losing my train of thought right now because I'm just trying to think of all these names right now. We're already going too long on this. But when they brought in Graham Barton, they wanted to get rid of the Robert old center, Robert Hainsey. Yeah. Thank you. And because of Hainsey, that was another one. And he was fine last year. But Bradley Bozeman with the Chargers, same thing.
Yeah.
Go knows the offense, all that stuff. So I really like Dwayne Ledford, the O-line coach, but that was just another one with the Ravens because they want to compete. Other names I kind of brought up. Jackson Hawes for the Bills, tight end, a blocking tight end. Because Bills,
but yeah, that's a good one.
Ooh, who do you have?
Christian Benford, who I think is really, really good, oh. And the rest of their secondary is like,
we'll see.
Okay.
Yeah,
we'll see about all that. They're changing over defensive systems too, and he's just another guy. Like every time I'm watching receivers and they go against Buffalo, I just think Christian Benford, probably because he wears that hideous jersey number, is really underrated. He's somebody that I think is probably in that Al-Shaair Aziz Al-Shaair tier.
That's
where it's like,
one.
Oh, we all know he's good, and but actually if he missed time would be really, really devastating, I think, because I think then you could just
that's a good
just
one.
Launch it over their defense.
Yeah, I'm really giddy on watching Jim Leonard as a defense coordinator this year. I think the safeties are really good for what he wants to do. Like I actually think Cole Bishop's a better fit for him than what Sean McDermott wanted to run. I never liked that pairing with McDermott's kind of traditional defense. But I agree with the corners. Benford's real good, like Pro Bowl quality. But yeah, Hairston I didn't like as a prospect. Like I thought he was a day two guy. And then I think he battled injuries last year too, but he kind of came up and down. So we'll see. No, I think that was a good one too. I'm trying to think. I haven't. Oh, Josh Oliver for the Vikings, just because blocking tight ends. Colby Parkinson for the Rams, blocking tight ends. Hey, you want to do all that multi tight end looks? Better have that Y that can set the edge.
AJ Barner for the Seahawks.
It's just theory. Yes, that's an. Oh, yes, that's another one. Yeah, otherwise it's just theory. What was the other one? And then the Jonah Jackson and Joe Tooney for the Bears. But Joe Tooney got Offensive Lineman of the Year award. So he's not underappreciated or under the radar and a Pro Bowler and all that, all pro. So he's maybe not the best one. All right, here we go. We got a couple more here before we get out of here. Pat S. This one's pretty easy. That's why I went to it. Which team is the most likely to slingshot into a playoff spot based on finishing last in the division in 2025, similar to the Patriots' strength of schedule last year? I feel like there's one definitive answer, but I was curious how you went about this.
I think the obvious answer, finishing last in their division, would be the Lions theoretically finished last in the NFC North, and that's a really difficult division. Obviously, a lot of good players. A lot of good teams in the NFC South. I just spoiled them. The answer that I think is our other one. It would be the Lions would be the end of the NFC.
We're professional podcasters.
We'll get there. Right, totally. We're good at this. I did say I was rusty. I warned everybody at the top. But no, in the NFC North, there's a lot of good teams, but the Lions still could be a very good team and win that division. But yes, I'm guessing that your obvious answer was the New Orleans Saints in the NFC South, which I just spoiled there.
Yeah, I think that's the easiest answer. I think they're everyone's favorite, but it's one of those where it's like, you know, I have a little hipster in me and I'm like always trying to go like, oh, well, you say this, but I think this. And it's like, no, I get the Saints. Like I get the hype. They built the whole line. They added auxiliary receivers. You know, ETN's not my favorite, but I actually like it for that backfield because I like Devin Neal too to pair with him and whatever's going with Kamara. The defense was kind of underrated last year. I think their defense is like 11th in weighted DVOA at the end of the year. And so again, they're playing in a weak division. I think the Bucs are getting slept on a little bit. But I do think that the Saints are like probably the definitive answer here. And then if we expand it to losing record and can make a playoff run, is there any others that captured your attention? The Lions is a good technically true answer as well. Because Cowboys, what's for me? Cowboys are like, you know, that was one. because I have all the stock on the Cowboys right now, like Chiefs, I guess. Clearly. Bengals, Ravens. That feels like cheating, though. Those guys, those teams already did it. You know, they've already had some winning seasons very recently. So the kind of feels like the Saints are just the cleanest answer. And I liked your Lions shout out too.
Yeah, on the Saints though, I will say, and like I said, it's June. Nobody cares. Three just weird or maybe slightly negative things that have happened for the Saints in June. You mentioned one of them is the Kamara thing, where it seems like they don't want him there, but he only wants to be there. And I like, okay, I guess we're just, you can't tell me they signed Travis Etienne to like be the lead back with Kamara and you just can't convince me that that's what anybody wants.
You and I can't get to the story. We know they love Neil.
We know they like Neil. You certainly cannot convince this podcast. I don't think you can convince any podcast that they wanted Kamara around, but they gave him a contract not too long ago and he doesn't want to play anywhere else. So guess what, folks? He's there. That's a little weird. Plus, like, Jordan Tyson's still just not, I know maybe that you could say they're limiting him, whatever, but there's still like a hamstring thing going on with him. Yeah. Like I said, it's June. Who cares? Okay. Who cares? And then Chris Olave is still dealing with the blood clots that caused him to miss week 18. And that's pretty serious stuff. So little bit of like a house of cards risk here with some of the things that we are excited about. I'm only saying this now because, like I said, it's June. Who cares? But I pretty much have only said positive things about the Saints since, I don't know, week 18 of last year. Like, I've pretty much have been wire to wire, and I'm going to get positive on the Saints here if all this stuff is a nothing burger, and it's most likely a nothing burger. But I at least want to have it on the record that if things fall apart here, we know what happened. There's injuries to the top two receivers, and it could be Tyler Shuck throwing to, you know, Devon Vele and the boys at some point. That would be obviously not a deal.
Is Jalen Polk still on the roster? Have they cut him?
He is.
Yet?
Oh yeah. No, he's on the roster. Oh, yeah, him and Tyler there. Shuck still are fishing there. Buddies. I don't know if you know this, but and Tyler Shuck are there. Yeah, there's a fish. We got a fishing narrative between Jalen Polk and Tyler Shuck. So look at that.
Dude, and on top of it, Oscar Delp, I think their third round tight end selection, who I like. I don't think he practiced either. I think he had some injuries as well, which is another thing that cropped up in college. But I know I like their draft a lot. Oh yeah, and then.
Yeah,
got Bryce Lance on the team. We haven't even mentioned Bryce Lance. You know, gotta throw him in there, my deep ball favorite and everything. But yeah, I know Jalen Polk still be on the roster. It's just every time I see that, I'm always like, oh, there you are, because just a curious case of Jalen Polk, man. That's one I'll never ever forget. Yeah, all right, getting into our kind of last thing here, but also you mentioned how tight the NFC North is, and I think I change every day who I would pick to win if we were doing a show. We got our division previews in a month, don't worry. But right now, it's Lions are plus 175, Packers are plus 220, Bears are plus 310, defending champion. The Vikings are plus 525, and I legit, like, right now I'm kind of leaning a little bit Lions, but not really anymore. Actually, the Vikings are the weirdest ones I feel the best about, which is another thing because they have quarterback questions. It's like I change every time, and I'm like, oh, the Bears. No, I actually really like with the Bears. Who's starting a left tackle? Okay, we'll get back to that. All right, now the Packers. Okay, who do I like at the Packers? Josh Jacobs. Oh, shoot. Who's starting? Okay, and the defense might not be. Okay, oh, God. So it's like every time I get excited about a team and get hyped up about Jordan Love, there's a whole rest of the team that kind of like, okay, but they have answers on defense they have to figure out, and they got to figure out who's starting at this spot. Can they stop the run? So yeah, NFC North is going to be, that's going to hurt the brain for a little bit, but
I'm all in on Chicago. All right, last question. Just for the record. I'm not going to waver.
You still are?
No, I'm not going to waver. I'm all in on Chicago. I'm not going to get tempted by any of the start nine dot win nonsense.
Jingle the keys.
Propaganda.
Not gonna jingle the keys. Yeah, and follow that.
No shiny objects. Yeah.
Oh man, I could fall for any of these teams, but I know the Bears' offense is just so fun. I love it so much. I love watching. I like watching all these offenses. All right, I'm trying to narrow it down to the last one. You guys, a bunch of you guys sent out great questions, and I really, really appreciate every single one that you sent in. I got an email because this is the last thing I really saw. Before we started the show, it popped into the outline. I actually just thought I was curious. I wanted to throw it to you. Might be a little too juicy to end on. This is from Matt Michael or Matt Michelle. I'm sorry. I've been thinking a lot This is his email. I've been thinking a lot about how to determine the most important person on each team. I generally like the concept of a him or me ranking. The idea being if two people from each team storm into the owner's suite and says something, we can't keep working together. You got to choose one of us and trade, cut, fire the other, who the owner ultimately chooses to side with. How many non-head coaches or QBs do you think win the it's him or me game? So they mentioned, Matt mentioned like Howie Roseman or Will Anderson Jr., even though Roseman's a GM as well. Oh, no, the owner we're talking about, blah, blah, blah. But curious if you agree with those, if anybody else comes to mind to lose a clear non-QB head coach choice after the Myles Garrett trade. Any come to mind to you? I thought that was a pretty fun one. Kind of like if they went in head coach and another player, like, oh, they also said, this was another one, which of the battles do you think would be closest? And they said, I settled on Ben Johnson and Caleb Williams as my number one pick. That's a really fun one.
Do you think that's like, close?
Right.
I mean, yeah, I think it's Ben Johnson too. That's why I was like, I don't know.
Okay. Okay.
Yeah, I know. Yeah. I don't know that it's that. Like, I'm pretty pro Caleb Williams, and I think I actually am very confident that he's going to be. I think he's going to be better than he was last year, but I actually think that's like, yep. If I was the Bears owner, I'd just side with Ben Johnson almost like 95% of the time. I don't know that.
He's,
yeah. So
he's doing good.
Yeah, he's doing pretty good.
I had one that came. The one that came to mind to me was Matthew Stafford or Sean McVay.
I see. That's the thing where though, like, if I pick Stafford, how long am I picking?
Sean McVay, you going to Monday Night Football in 2 years, or am I getting you for five? Right. Like that's part of it.
Theoretically, and this is even the same case if it's Ben Johnson and Caleb Williams. How old is Ben Johnson? Like, is he? I don't know off the top of my head.
It's like our age.
Yeah, I was gonna say he's in his
38.
Right. Theoretically, it won't work. This would never happen. But if he's 30, let's just say he's 39, like he could be my head coach for another 30 years. Yeah. So I wouldn't live in the moment of like Caleb Williams, and I would pick Ben Johnson. Same with theoretically Sean McVay and Matthew Stafford. Sean McVay, also a pretty young man himself. Theoretically, he could be the Rams head coach. Until he dies, like, you know, that's right. It's very, very possible, right? Like, it's not possible, but theoretically it's realistic, whereas like Matthew Stafford's going to be here for another year, two, whatever. Even Caleb Williams will be an NFL player for another decade. Multiple decades out. So I would pick the head coach almost every time just because of that. And that might be a very stupid way to think about it, but theoretically, like, I think the highest upside case is there. In terms of other, you go off on that.
Oh no, I was just thinking because I'm racking my brain trying to think of some good ones, but then get into like Jesse Minter or Lamar Jackson, and then it's
about Jesse Minter,
and you don't know anything about Lamar, Jesse, but then it's like in a year you might be like, oh, you know, and that's like that one's a little bit easier. So I mean, it was just trying to think of like a player or two players, I guess, but like a player and maybe a non-play calling head coach or something. But man, I should have marinated on this one longer. I thought it was a great question. So that's why I wanted
to. It's a great question. It's really easy with a guy like obviously in like Seattle. Am I taking Mike McDonald or Sam Darnold? I mean, shoot, I love Jackson Smith and Jigba, but like I would take Mike McDonald. So I'm pretty. If you're a head coach who's a real, real needle mover on your side of the ball, unless it was like Kyle Shanahan had Josh Allen, like then I think we can have a conversation about it. That's hard. But I do think, and this is again the stupid way to think about it, like just if I was the owner of the team, if all things worked out, which nothing works out to plan, but everybody's ego driven and this is how we think about things, if all things worked out perfectly, like this guy could be your head coach forever, you know? And I mean,
yeah.
So I don't know that I don't know how many other like non-head coaches or quarterbacks would make the list, though. I think Howie Roseman is like the obvious one, but honestly, aren't you making the case to Howie Roseman at this point? Isn't he like isn't he Grima Wormtongue, you know, to King Theoden, but like complimentary? Isn't like kind of a like you're making the case to him?
Has good ideas. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly, but not Grima Wormtongue, you know. It's a bad analogy, but yeah, I don't know.
Jim Harbaugh or Justin Herbert?
I think I'd take Herbert.
I think so too. I know that was one I just came up with right now. And then the other ones would be like, is there a defense? Like, I don't know. I think I'd take LaFleur. I was going to say Micah Parsons or Matt LaFleur. Like, that's another one. Like, when you go non-QB.
Yeah.
I know. I kind of want to start my team with Micah Parsons, you know? And right. Like, that's a tough one,
too. It's not healthy right now. That makes it a little easier to say LaFleur.
Yeah. But. LaFleur, I know. He does a great job. I know. This was one I want to, like, come back to almost. Put a pin in this and the next one. Be like, all right, here are the ones I'm going to throw out here and that we can talk about, too. But, yeah, though, there's some interesting ones out there. I know the Kyle
Shanahan. Mike Vrabel or Drake May? I think that's probably Drake. Yeah, yeah. Okay. Sorry. Stupid.
You know, Vrabel, on top of, I do think there's some stuff right now, too, where it's encouraging. I think what they're trying to do on offense, I've heard through the grapevine that they're trying to put more on Mays plate. And I think, again, they've learned some lessons that I keep harping on from the Super Bowl, the offensive line plan there. I thought Vrabel was really disappointing with his game management in that game too. So I've kind of lowered myself because I always thought he was kind of underrated in that aspect. But man, it was just, you know, May. It's not, Vrabel doesn't call plays. I know that's not fair or anything. It is fair actually in this conversation. But I think May is just one of those where that's a little bit more definitive between those two. Yeah, I know.
Okay.
Another one would be like head coach or offensive play caller or offensive play caller and GM. You know, yes. Vic Fangio or Howie Roseman. That like they're you're picking brains now.
Yeah, see that's where I would probably be overly confident and overly aggressive, and I go back to like the Bucks a couple of years ago. Should they not have just fired Todd Bowles and promoted Liam Cohen to be the head coach? Like, they should have. Right. I said at the time I would have done that. That's actually okay. I have two more of these just quarterback head coach ones. One to pick it right at your heart, and then the other one to maybe get you in trouble with a fan base that already hates you. One, Liam Cohen or Trevor Lawrence.
I knew that was coming. All right. I knew that was the first one, and I know what your second one's going to be.
Okay. Well, what's your answer one? To that one? My second one.
Oh, that one? I think Cohen does get the nod slightly, but that one's pretty. Yeah. I feel like they're both in the same kind of boat or tier, I guess, for me, you know, where it's like, okay, they've shown it. All right, do it again. You know, it's like, all right, now do it again and sustain. But I think Cohen actually gets the slight nod for me because now I've seen him do it in multiple spots and it feels real.
Same. I would go Cohen.
Okay. I know that one is up in my heart.
Nick Sirianni or Jalen Hurts or trapdoor start over.
Probably Hurts.
Hurts. Actually, no. Let me say it. Definitely Hurts. If it was me, I would. Yeah, I would definitely pick Jalen Hurts.
Definitely, because and whether it's fair to Sirianni or not, is that he doesn't call plays, and yes, he has a managed personalities. I get that, but even if you say, oh, he's great with game and clock management stuff, and he's super aggressive on fourth down, that's the Eagles franchise mandate. That's not him as a coach going like. You know, like where I see Dan Campbell doing it, it's like, well, Dan Campbell, that's like him. You know, like he probably listened to analytics and everything. And he was like, no, I want to be, he's a Parcells guy anyway. I want to be aggressive anyways. But like with the Eagles, it's like whoever the coach was, like, you know, Doug Peterson was there and they were super aggressive on fourth down. It was, you know, so that's like Sirianni is not, it's a tough spot. He's not going to get any credit, even if he does have some input on there. But for me, from a step away, you know, just looking at this, it's like, yeah, I'd still rather go with Hurts because it's at least, I have something tangible with you as opposed to Sirianni, where it's just like, I think he just has to put on a brave face sometimes. I know it's not fair. Being a head coach is very hard. Trust me, but it's just one of those. That's how I read it anyways. That's a good one though. Those are good ones. I know. I want to come up with like five more of these. I mean, I'm sure some people will come and will reply to this with a few more, but you know, also was fun doing the show with you, Matt. It's great to have you back. We're closing it out today. We'll be back every Tuesday throughout the off season. I'm going to take a vacation soon, but we'll still have those shows on Tuesday. I'm Nate Tice. You can find me at Nate_Tice on social media. Check out my written stuff on Yahoo Sports. And that's Matt Harmon. You can find him at Matt_BYB on Twitter and social media. Matt, you just said you're doing your year 4 charting. Anything else you're working on outside of the fantasy show? Or including the fantasy show?
The fantasy show on Wednesday. We're once a week, I think, until like late July, and then we'll be five days a week coming up in August, sooner than you think. on that note, yeah, a lot of fantasy draft prep right now. There's gonna be some cool stuff at Yahoo this year, so you can get excited about that. Very, very cool fantasy stuff coming this year.
Awesome, everyone! Make sure to check it out. It's the best stuff out there. Yeah, I know. in my dynasty leagues, I still actually have two more to do our rookie drafts in. I actually got me a little excited because those leagues wait until training camp, and which I want it to happen as quick as possible. I'd prefer it to happen before the draft with dynasty leagues, but it's like the longer it goes, it's like then the word gets out about some guys, and then all of a sudden Colson Loveland's going earlier than you want him to go. The other guy's going a little bit earlier than you want him to go. But anyways, make sure you check out Matt's stuff. It's the best. I love checking it out. I'm going to check out those year four guys soon. But subscribe to us here at Football 301. Subscribe to the Yahoo Fantasy Forecast as well. Subscribe to everything. Check out everything on Yahoo Sports. We've got plenty of great stuff coming out for your ears and eyes. And rate us 5 stars over here at Football 301. But also big news. The Yahoo Sports NFL YouTube channel is here. Subscribe now so you're ready when we move over next month and check out all of our great content over there. So make sure to subscribe and like all that good stuff over there.
That's news to me. Smirk? That's news to me. Yeah. I didn't even know that.
We're special. Bought our own place.
Nice.
Yeah. Love it. We're out of mom and dad's basement. Yeah. We got our own spot now. Yeah. Over there. It's a little apartment.
Moving into
one bedroom.
Moving into an apartment. Yeah. But, you know, soon enough. Be a freaking mansion over there. So yeah, get ready and subscribe now, people.
Thanks to everyone behind the scenes for making us look and sound good. It's a super fun show today. And I appreciate all those guys' help. All and girls, Maddie, hi. All you guys' help and helping us out over there. Thank you all for listening. Check us out here at Football 301. See you guys next week.